Hello, friends. Hello, lovers. Welcome once again to Life Without Consequence. My name is Davey Francis. I'm the author, narrator, and host of this show you are listening to, and I am so happy that you're here. The universe is a very big place, and forever is a very long time. The minds of humans only get the smallest glimpse of what has occurred throughout the course of history. Parker and Benj, the main characters in this story, have found themselves tangled up in something much larger than either of them could ever begin to comprehend. The idea of trying to hasn't even occurred to them because, well, they have some rather immediate concerns. In hopes of atoning for the chaos they caused back in 2076, Parker Luderi and Benj Cave have decided to help a woman in trouble. Trouble caused by a man named Tucker, who looks and acts shockingly similar to Parker himself. Meeting Tucker gave Parker a glimpse at the person he would have been had he not suffered the consequences of his actions. Thus far, it looks as though they've succeeded. They've saved the girl, they've defeated the bad guy. But if that's the case, then why is there still two episodes of this show left? If Nina's words at the end of last week's episode were any indication, things are about to get even weirder. This is the penultimate episode of the first book in the Life Without Consequence story. I say first book because I hope you, the listener, and potential publishers, are interested in hearing more about what happens to the people that are left at the end of this story. Please, I would love to hear any and all thoughts you have about this book and the characters in it. I want to thank everyone who's come with me, Parker, and Benj on this journey, particularly the Patreon producers Hampus, Andrew McGuire, and Cole Biffle. I feel like this intro has been a little longer than usual, and there are definitely some very pressing issues happening within this story. And you probably want to get back to them instead of listening to me talk. So with that said, welcome to episode 11 of Life Without Consequence. Chapter 35, Parker. Parker pulled himself upright and sat back against the Jeep. The skin of his neck was raw and radiated red warmth back at the freezing air. The clouds above them had parted ways, allowing a little early evening sun to shine down upon their victory. The sky that had been hidden behind the clouds was as blue as Parker had ever seen it before. The bright, vivid color of it brought a strange kind of life to the dead of winter. More and more frequently now, things were escalating into scenarios of complete and utter madness. Parker wondered briefly whether he would eventually become desensitized to these sorts of things. But as a gelatinous piece of what he could only assume was Brendan's brain arced through the air and landed on the back of his hand, Parker realized desensitization had probably already happened. "Ew," he said as he wiped it off in the snow beneath him. Tucker stopped swinging the 2x4 and looked at Parker. It was the first time he'd taken a break from pummeling at Brendan's very dead body since he started. He was breathing so heavily his entire upper body heaved back and forth as the air passed in and out of him. "Oh, no," Parker said, waving a hand dismissively. "Don't stop on my account. You just pretend I'm not even here." It, the bludgeoning, had been going on for nearly 5 minutes now. Once Tucker had knocked him to the ground, he just kept swinging like a man possessed. Parker thought about trying to intervene at a couple junctures, moments when Tucker had slowed down slightly, but he honestly didn't see the point. Tucker was very clearly going through a thing, something Parker could relate to. By the time the thought to stop it had even entered his mind, Brendan was very much dead, and Parker didn't see the harm in just letting things run their course. Tucker tossed the bloody length of wood into the snow, then, still desperately panting, dropped himself down next to Parker and stared at the thing he'd done. Parker turned to him, but Tucker didn't look away from the pile of mushy gore that used to be his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. Parker's face screwed up, ever so slightly, as he watched beads of sweat run down the side of Tucker's pink cheeks and into the patchy scruff he probably called a beard. It was like looking into a bizarre mirror, and he didn't particularly like it. Tucker's face was pale and looked softer than his. He was clearly younger by several years, but it wasn't age that made the difference. This was 20-something years in a climate that knew how to spell the word humidity. The desert had dried Parker out, tanned his skin, and shrunk it to fit his bones differently. But he and Tucker had the same bones. A thick scar passed through Tucker's right eyebrow and split it in two. It looked old, maybe a childhood accident, the confluence of a careless toddler and the sharp edge of a doorframe. The result was the kind of thing Parker saw people do for fashion. He thought Tucker probably hated it. Parker didn't have one of those scars, but just like the bones, those were his eyebrows too. Parker was covered in scars that Tucker probably didn't have. Those were all incidents and add-ons. It was all of the things that were part of your initial loadout. The things that you have the moment you're born. Those were the things that, if they could compare notes, Parker decided, would be exactly the same. Time travel? Parallel dimensions? How many different ways can the universe put a person together before a pattern repeats? Before two people have the same fingerprint? Before the pits, furrows, and swirls of an iris form in precisely the same way a second time? Before an explosive and violent temper, usually triggered by the desire to protect someone you love, is duplicated into another human being? Parker had always so vehemently avoided thoughts of fate and infinity, but this spoke so loudly to those concepts he was presently unable to tune them out. What the fuck are you looking at? Tucker grunted, still not looking away from Brendan. Parker smiled. Something connected to the muscles he used to smile had been damaged, and God, it hurt, but he couldn't help it. In an act of excessive, over-the-top rage, the kind of which Parker had been craving since he'd witnessed a huge, monstrous hand take Nina from him, Tucker had succeeded where Parker felt like he failed. Brendan had threatened someone he cared for, and Tucker had responded by ensuring that man would never have a chance to do anything like that again. There were obviously some rather dire details that would need to be dealt with. He had just brutally murdered a man in broad daylight after all. Thankfully, though, they were still yet to draw the attention of any neighbors. They would probably need to, at the very least, cover the body in snow soon. For now, though, Parker and Tucker just sat and talked. I said, "What the fuck are you looking at?" Tucker said again, now turning and seeing Parker's stupid, concussed smile. "What's she like?" Parker asked. Tucker screwed up his face in response. "Who? Nina?" he asked, then took a brief moment to think. "She's mad at me a lot." It was as if he just said the first thing that came into his head. And it was exactly what Parker wanted to hear. He laughed. It hurt more than smiling, but he let it happen anyway. "Of course she is," he said. "She loves rock and roll," Tucker continued, reaching into his pocket for a pack of cigarettes. Parker's ears pricked up at that little bite of information. "But it's like terrible rock and roll," Tucker elaborated further. "She's into all those bands from the 80s, you know, the hair metal stuff, Motley Crue, Stryper, the fucking Scorpions." For the first time since he'd arrived in Cleveland, someone had mentioned a piece of pop culture he recognized, and they'd said it like it was a bad thing. "What do you mean, the fucking Scorpions?" he said, imitating Tucker. "The Scorpions fucking rule." Tucker rolled his eyes as he lit the cigarette. His hands were sticky with quickly drying blood. He took a deep drag, then exhaled as he shook his head. "The Misfits rule. The Dead Kennedys rule. The Scorpions do not," Tucker clarified. "Well, I don't know who the fuck those bands are, but I'll tell you one thing. There is never a bad time for winds of change," Parker said with total conviction, then plucked a cigarette out of Tucker's mouth. Tucker gawked at him like he just said the most offensive thing he'd ever heard. "Is this real?" Parker asked as he brought the cigarette to his lips. Tucker laughed and shook his head. "Yeah, it's real. Why do you keep asking that?" Parker took a drag from the cigarette before Tucker had even finished the sentence. "Because," he said, already taking a break for another puff. Tobacco's grown in Kentucky, and those assholes don't export shit. Tucker looked confused. Future stuff, huh? Future stuff, Parker confirmed as he took one more long pull from the cigarette, then asked a question that had been nagging at him. You gonna work things out with her? Parker coughed as he handed the suddenly half-smoked cigarette back. Tucker looked a little confused, then pensive, like the comment had reminded him of something he wanted to say. And then he said it. With Nina? No, man. I want to come back with you and Benj. To Vegas. The future, or whatever it is. Parker couldn't believe what he was hearing. Tucker hadn't come back to help him or Nina. He'd come back because he wanted a trip in a time machine. Parker wanted to laugh, but had learned his lesson there. Instead, he lowered his head and sighed. Why the fuck would you want to do something like that? He asked, wishing he hadn't given the cigarette back. He wasn't sure what he was supposed to be more bothered by, the stupidity or the selfishness. As far as Parker was concerned, this guy had it all. There was clean air here, weather that did what it was supposed to when it was supposed to. He lived in a house that wasn't eligible for condemned status, and for Christ's sake, he had Nina. The world was Tucker's oyster, and he wanted to throw it all away for shitty fucking Las Vegas. Before Tucker had a chance to respond and explain why he'd give it all up, their attention was stolen by the sound of someone screaming. Parker! Parker! Tucker stood up and peered over the roof of the red Jeep to see who was yelling. Parker tried to get up, quickly realizing that the few hits he'd taken from Brendan had done a real number on him. Don't worry, I'm fine down here, he grumbled. Tucker rolled his eyes, then reached down to haul Parker to his feet. Leaning over the roof, Parker squinted at the noisy shape rounding the corner of the block onto Nina's street. Is that Benj? Tucker asked as the shape grew enough to be distinguished as a person. Jesus, he's got a set of lungs on him. Would you believe he hadn't said a word for 13 years until today? Tucker glared skeptically at Parker, who grinned back at him, knowing exactly how unbelievable the comment sounded, while simultaneously being true. Benj, who they could now see being flanked by Tank, was running at full speed through the snowy slush of a residential Cleveland street, screaming at the top of his lungs for Parker's attention. While he could definitely make some noise, Parker and Tucker struggled to understand him. What's he saying? Tucker asked. Breaded. Breaded Hunan. Coinstar breaded Hunan, Parker mused. He could feel Tucker looking at him with disdain as his guesses became more and more absurd. After all, why would Benj be so riled up about Chinese food at a time like this? He turned to look at his doppelganger with every intention of apologizing. But when he looked at Tucker, he found he was unable to pull his face in the expressive direction of apology. Instead, it contorted into horror as he watched Tucker's face rebound off of the car. The man whose face was just like his stared back at him, but it was empty and lifeless. The blow had knocked Tucker out of himself entirely, and what Parker saw was only an answering machine, a pre-recorded message to inform a caller that the lines were still connected, but there was no one available to answer at that time. As Tucker's face, the face that was also Parker's, began to collide again and again with the side of the car, it gradually became less recognizable, and the chances of those lines ever being reconnected again grew more and more slim with every hit. Parker fell to the ground, instinct compelling his body to back away and flee. But he couldn't quite convince his eyes to avert themselves from the sight of Brendan's headless body, somehow stood upright and full of life, repeatedly smashing Tucker's face into the side of the car. Parker very nearly wondered how it was possible, but instead his brain translated what Benj had been yelling. Brendan's not human. Brendan's a monster. From somewhere inside of Brendan, Parker heard a sound. He was trying to speak.
Are you scared now?
The Brendan creature said in a gurgling attempt at words. They undulated from within him, complete with a sputtering bloody geyser that erupted from where his head used to be. Parker heard a voice that was probably Tank.
Jesus fucking Christ!
There were hands on him, dragging him to the other side of the vehicle, He couldn't see it anymore, but he could hear it, and that was enough. Parker felt dazed, like he was going to black out again. But before he could slip into darkness, he felt the sharp sting of a palm crossing his face, ensuring he stayed awake. He shook some sense back into his thoughts and glared at Benj. "How dare you?" he snapped at his friend with a bit of playful sarcasm. The three men all cracked a smile for the briefest of moments before the sounds coming from the other side of the car reintroduced them to the nightmare of a situation they were all in. Chapter 36. Parker, Benj, and to a certain extent, Tank. As Brendan's reanimated corpse repeatedly smashed Tucker's head against Nina's Jeep, Parker, Benj, and Tank tried to regroup.
"What the fuck is that?"
Tank asked. "That is Brendan," Parker replied.
"What happened to his
head?" "Tucker happened to his head. Well, I guess technically a 2x4 happened to his head, but Tucker was the one swinging it." The comment stopped Tank's questions dead in their tracks and left him staring at the ground, contemplating his previous assumptions of Tucker.
"Are you okay?"
Benj asked Parker. "I'll live," he replied. "Where's Nina?"
"She's safe,"
Benj responded.
"How's he still standing?"
Tank apparently had more questions.
"Weren't you listening to Nina?" Benj snapped. "He's a monster."
The statement was punctuated by the quiet conclusion to Brendan's violence. A silence that was only broken by the sound of Tucker's body dropping to the floor. After exchanging terrified and uncertain glances with Parker and Tank, Benj slowly crouched down and looked underneath Nina's Jeep. Tucker's lifeless body could be seen lying there, discarded onto the snowy ground. He was very clearly dead. And it didn't take more than a second of contemplation for Benj to decide that he did not need an investigative understanding of the injuries that had killed him. He quickly looked away, leaning back against the Jeep as the color drained out of him. Tank moved to stand, but was quickly stopped by Parker grabbing his jacket and pulling him back down, an action that drew him a frustrated glare from the larger man. Tank didn't have many hobbies. Outside of his love for Cleveland sports and a rather personal enthusiasm for all things DC Comics, the only other thing you could say Tank was truly passionate about was fighting. He liked to fight, and he liked it because he was good at it. That's not to say he'd never lost a fight. He'd lost plenty, though each time he'd gone down swinging. What Tank had never done was back down. He was well over 6'3". And could easily have done push-ups with Benj sitting on his back. He'd never come across a single person that he didn't think he could beat up, and the sight of a headless police officer caving in someone's skull against the side of a car wasn't about to change that. Tank shrugged Parker off and pulled himself up against the window. He peered through the car, intending to size up an opponent. However, what Tank saw through the windows of the Jeep rearranged not just his assessment of the situation, but likely his entire understanding of reality. Brendan was swaying from side to side, rolling his shoulders as if he was trying to work out a stiff muscle. Each time he would flex his biceps and pound his fists together like a pro wrestler from the 1990s. Except instead of a slick, greased-up hot dog, Brendan looked like bloody burger meat. The motion came in tandem with inhuman grunts and spurts of black blood that erupted from the hole where his head usually would have been. It was hard to tell through the dirty, gore-splattered windows of the Jeep, but Tank thought he could see Brendan's limbs and torso growing, somehow swelling in size with each heaving flex. Mentally, he went through all the usual troubleshooting of reality a thinking brain does when it sees something it cannot immediately explain. But when Brendan's police uniform split open and ripped entirely off of his body, Tank's mind admitted that there were no more excuses it could make. He was watching someone transform. By the time Brendan's quads and calves exploded through the seams of his navy blue pants, Tank was in a state of fear-induced paralysis. He wanted more than anything in the entire world to turn and run, to leave these people that had just entered his life, to flee the city, the country, the whole region, and not stop moving until he was several time zones away from the thing that stood feet from him. His body betrayed him, and all he could do was watch and try not to think about the warm sensation of piss soaking his jeans. When Tank stood up, he'd done so with the understanding that he was looking at a man. A man, even a headless one, was something he could comprehend. But as the torso of this hulking monstrosity split apart to expose row after row of what Tank's human thoughts defined as teeth, he understood that a man was the furthest thing from what he was seeing. The wet, sludgy smack of skin and muscle separating was followed by a howl of relief. A celebratory sound of a creature that had been captive finally finding freedom. The strange noises and sudden odor of exceedingly dehydrated urine drew the curiosity of Parker and Benj, who popped up either side of Tank. They were just in time to see the two bulging pectoral muscles above a freshly opened wound of a mouth split open and reveal two huge eyeballs. The scleras of each were barely visible for bloodshot streaks that raced towards rust-colored corneas, and two black holes posing as pupils.
"Jesus,"
Benj said, letting every letter of the word hang.
"I was not expecting that,"
Parker remarked candidly.
"What were you expecting?"
"I don't know. Maybe he grew a new head. Definitely not this." Between them, Tank stood silent, rigid with fear as tears streamed uncontrollably down his face. He'd never seen anything like this before. He'd barely come to terms with seeing a person teleport. The real-life horror movie he was now watching seemed on course to break him entirely. The thing that had up until recently been Brendan pulled its posture together, where it had briefly rocked like a baby during its first steps. It now stood with firm footing, ready to implement the dexterity its new form had gifted it. Two bowling ball-sized eyes locked onto the three gawking men shielding themselves behind the vehicle and laughed. It didn't sound like a laugh any of them had heard before, but it honored the sentiment through a learned cadence it was only exerting for the benefit of its audience. The Brendan thing reached down, picked up Tucker's body, and like it was made of wet cardboard, ripped it clean in half, showering itself in the dead man's blood. In the short and exhausting span of time that had been the last few days, Parker had seen things, gruesome and frightening things that would remain as clear as crystal in his memory for as long as he breathed. Every time he felt like things had reached their pinnacle, their absolute in terms of nightmare fuel, his expectations were exceeded. The creature hurled Tucker's upper half with a velocity that sent chills down Parker's spine. It cascaded through the air and smashed through what was left of Nina's front window. And then with terrifying speed, the creature rushed the car, slamming against it with enough force to rock it briefly onto two wheels. It was glaringly obvious it could have easily rolled the thing on top of them, but Parker and Benj still heaved the car back towards the Brendan monster with everything they had. It charged the car again, still laughing like it was having the time of his life.
"Run!"
Parker screamed at Benj.
"Run!"
Benj called back. The pair shoved themselves off of the Jeep and sprinted for cover behind a nearby parked car. They looked back to see that Tank had neglected to follow suit. Instead, he'd opted for squatting down to quietly whimper as the Brendan thing lay waste to the opposite side of Nina's Jeep.
"Oh, are you fucking kidding me?"
Parker cursed under his breath as he spun on his heels to go and retrieve Tank. In a shocking exhibition of strength, the Brendan creature single-handedly ripped off one of the doors of the Jeep and hurled it at its fleeing prey, narrowly missing Benj as he ducked into safety. When Parker made it to Tank, he grabbed the terrified man by his head, forced eye contact, and slapped him so hard he knocked the baseball cap clear off of his head.
"Hey," he barked, "I know this is fucked up, but I can't deal with someone else dying because of me. So I need you to pull your shit together and help me help you survive this."
It was a rare moment of honesty for Parker. The guilty feeling of powerlessness he and Benj had been introduced to as teenagers had been nagging at him since he looked into Lenny's terrified eyes back at the house. And by now, it was primed to consume him entirely. He'd gone there, to Nina's house, to save people. Thus far, all he'd managed to do was let more people die. He hadn't known Tucker. Not really. He'd barely known Tank from any other asshole in a crowd. But Parker was suddenly determined to prevent another person from meeting their ends at the hands of another monster.
"How dare you?"
Tank mumbled. "That's my boy," Parker responded with a laugh. The victory was short-lived and ruined by Brendan leaping from the ground to the top of the Jeep directly above them. The roof bowed. The remaining windows exploded from the force. And Parker and Tank ran as fast as they could to join Benj.
"Little pig! Little pig!"
the Brendan monster called. Its voice was wet gravel.
"Is this guy fucking serious?"
Parker said to his companions as he rolled his eyes. Brendan had transformed into an inhuman monster, but he wasn't any less of an asshole.
"What are we gonna do?"
Tank asked frantically. He was no longer catatonic, but he wasn't any less terrified.
Benj? Plan?
Parker asked, gritting his teeth. Benj glared at him, annoyed that it was suddenly his responsibility. He didn't come up with plans, that was Parker's thing. Benj was the passive observer, just along for the ride. When Mad Mike had slit his own throat, Benj just watched from behind a crumbling pillar at the edge of their yard. He just stood there, paralyzed with fear, while Lenny exploded and some other monster from the depths of reality had taken Nina. Instead of getting involved and trying to help anyone, all he'd done was run away. How was he supposed to help with this?
But just then, as Benj was putting himself through yet another masochistic showing of the events that had occurred back at their house, something clicked. Strangely, in all of the horrible happenings from the past few days, Benj thought he might have found a solution to their current problem. He stole a glance over the hood of the car at the arrogant creature that was now headed in their direction. He saw Tucker's blood dripping off of it with every thunderous step it took, and Benj prayed he could make lightning strike twice.
"I got it! The blood! Lenny, that's it!"
Benj exclaimed, almost grinning. Parker and Tank looked at him, eagerly awaiting some kind of elaboration.
"I need you to distract him for like 30 seconds.
The excitement in his voice was undeniable.
"I'll do it,"
Tank said heroically.
"You're covered in piss," Parker pointed out.
Tank lowered his head, deflated.
"No, Tank, I need you to come with me. You think you can kick down a door?"
Benj asked. Tank stared at him and nodded slowly. It wasn't the eager and enthusiastic response Benj had been looking for, but it was better than nothing.
30 seconds? Parker asked.
30 seconds,
Benj confirmed.
Don't let him touch you.
Parker cocked his head to the side as he tried to figure out what exactly his friend was planning. But before he could ask, Benj pulled out the phone Tucker had stolen from Brendan and teleported him and Tank inside of Nina's apartment. All alone now, Parker took a deep breath. As much air as he could possibly hold in his lungs.
He held the breath inside of him and felt every open wound on his body throb. He focused on the sensation for a moment.
Then Parker stood up and faced the monster.
"Hey, you headless sack of murderous shit! You know, you are the ugliest heap of inhuman trash I have ever had the misfortune to lay eyes on, and I live in Las fucking Vegas. What exactly is it you're so fucking upset about? Is it the phone, or that you don't have a hostage anymore? You probably don't even know she's gone. That's right, asshole. We're already 10 steps ahead of you."
At least, that's what he would have said if Brendan hadn't backhanded him the moment he stood up and sent him skidding across the street. Face down with a mouthful of road slush, Parker's confidence faltered slightly, and he wondered if distracting this thing for 30 seconds was even possible. Chapter 37. Benj and Tank. The plan was simple. Get into the apartment, find Tucker's torso, and then hope to hell that he could make what happened with Lenny happen again. Only this time to their benefit. Benj didn't quite understand the rules yet, but he was working under the assumption that teleporting some of Tucker would teleport all of Tucker, along with everything that pieces of him were touching, specifically Brendan, or that thing outside that used to be Brendan. Thankfully, the infinite mirror effect that the office had been dressed in the last time he was here remained off. He was all but certain that seeing it would have broken Tank entirely at this point. Right now, his new comrade was marginally functional, and Benj hoped that would be enough to break something. "Tank!" he yelled, pointing at the door. "Break it down!" There wasn't a moment of hesitation. Tank ran full speed at the door and straight leg kicked it below the door handle, causing the entire room to shake. It was genuinely one of the most impressive things Benj had ever seen. But it didn't break the door. Tank bounced backwards and fell to the floor, grasping at his knee.
"I'm okay! I'm okay!"
Tank mumbled unconvincingly as he pulled himself to his feet. Benj's brief but confident mental run-through of this had definitely included Tank making short work of the door. It was only supposed to take one kick.
"No, no, no,"
Benj muttered to himself as the 30 seconds he'd promised Parker began to evaporate. Tank made a second attempt, this time shoulder-checking the door in hopes his full body weight might be enough to break it. The thunderous impact sent another shockwave through the room and caused the doorframe to bow slightly, but it still wasn't enough.
"What the hell is this thing made of?"
Tank yelled in frustration as he nursed his shoulder. The architectural integrity of the building was shocking to Benj. Back in Las Vegas, a strong wind from the right direction was enough to strip the siding from a building entirely. For the first time in his life, he felt like he genuinely understood the old adage that they don't make them like they used to.
"Together, on three,"
Benj declared as he joined Tank in front of the door. Tank looked at him enthusiastically as he rolled the stiffness out of his shoulder. Benj didn't weigh 150 pounds soaking wet. He had no idea if he could even try to help. But he'd promised Parker. Benj decided he had to do something.
"One, two, three, go, or go on three?"
Tank asked. Benj didn't look away from the door as the pang of frustration shot through him.
"On three,"
he responded, focusing on the target.
"One, two."
The two men threw themselves at their obstacle with everything they had. There was the briefest moment of resistance before the door gave completely, exploding from the frame with a loud cracking sound. Benj and Tank were momentarily in free fall before crashing to the floor.
"Ha ha! Fuck you, motherfucker!"
Tank yelled in celebration as he threw a couple extra cheap shots at his vanquished adversary. Benj clenched a fist and was almost about to join in with Tank when he was greeted with the unfortunately familiar scent of blood. They could both see it from the hallway they lay in. Tucker's remains, motionless in the middle of the living room, barely reminiscent of a human. Now it was just indistinguishable gore. Benj had seen a lot of blood recently. Not enough to where the sight of it no longer filled him with terror, but enough to where it didn't prompt him to vomit uncontrollably. The same could not be said for Tank, who was doing just that. From outside, Benj could hear the sound of screaming. Parker was still alive, and that meant he hadn't failed yet. Benj dug his hand into his pocket and pulled out the cell phone. Chapter 38. Parker.
"Ow,"
Parker said shakily. Or he thought he said it. The force of the blow had been so intense it was hard to immediately ascertain which thoughts were internal and which had been vocalized. The first sensation that returned with any definition was taste, which presented itself with the unmistakable metallic tang of blood. He was hurt, and he was hurt bad. Parker had never been severely injured before. Sure, his body was littered with echoes of cuts and bruises he'd picked up over the years, but he'd never actually sustained a life-threatening injury. At age 11, he was walking home from Benj's house and managed to get himself hit by a car. He'd gone right through the windshield, then been catapulted down the street when the vehicle skidded to a rather sudden stop. There was a lot of blood, and he couldn't taste anything sour for a few months, but he'd been back out and on the streets after a couple days in bed. A few weeks before all this started, he'd stormed out of Nina's place, and on the way from there to Rusty's, he'd been hassled for change by some lunatic in a loincloth. He didn't have any. He didn't even have any paper money. Parker had been planning on begging Rusty for credit to buy drinks with. The bum got a little overexcited and stabbed Parker in the stomach with a ballpoint pen. It hurt like nothing else he'd ever felt before. But after a couple stitches and a night in the hospital, which was covered by Nina's insurance, he learned that miraculously, the pen had missed anything major, and he'd be totally fine. There'd even be a shitty commemorative tattoo where the ink had stained his skin. Getting hurt was just like everything else in life. It all just kind of worked out in his favor. As Parker desperately tried to army crawl through the snowy slush that covered the road, he was beginning to think that kind of luck may have run out. He felt the sharp, sudden pain of his ankle being crushed under the weight of the Brendan thing's foot, hand, paw. It was hard to define exactly what its extremities could be classified as anymore. It must have grown to weigh at least 400 pounds at this point. Parker screamed at the top of his lungs as the pain sent him into convulsive spasms. Pinned down, and in the midst of all that agony, Parker found himself fixating on why no one had come out of their house yet. There was a literal monster destroying cars and ripping humans apart like they were made from soft bread, and none of it had garnered even the slightest bit of attention from the locals. Maybe Cleveland was worse than he thought. He didn't get much time to dwell on it, as the random thought was interrupted by the grim realization that he was almost certainly about to die. Parker had thought about this moment before, lamented on the revelations he might have when he was presented with his own mortality, who he would think about in his last moments, and how he'd feel about his life. He'd known that the relationship he and Nina shared would eventually come to an end. But Parker held tight to the consolation that the time they'd shared together was so important to him that he'd think about her at the end. He'd imagine thinking about his mother, and maybe having a moment to laugh about how crazy she'd been. He'd quietly, and just to himself, thank Benj for being the best friend he could have ever hoped for, and then he'd face whatever the means of his destruction were. None of that happened, though. Face down in the snow with some otherworldly monster leering over him, moments away from death, Parker only had one thought. This sucks. He heard the Brendan thing laughing. The sound filled him with rage. He tried to clench his fists, but only one of his hands seemed to work now. On the functioning hand, Parker could feel the cuts that had begun to heal splitting open as he squeezed. It hurt, but at least he was feeling something. Parker rolled over and delivered what he was perfectly okay with being his last words. Fuck you! Then punctuated them with two middle fingers. It was technically only one middle finger, as his other arm was very broken, preventing him from raising his hand. But the second was there, in spirit. As if some heavenly body was applauding his performance through mysterious means the human mind couldn't quite understand. The transformer on a nearby power pole exploded and showered sparks down onto the road. Each fiery ember hissed as their dramatic existences came to sudden ends in the snow. The explosion caught the attention of Brendan's two bulging red shoulder eyes. It glanced away from Parker for the briefest of moments. It could have used that time to kill him. All it would have taken was one more step, and Parker's skull would have been obliterated under the creature's weight. But it decided to look at the bright light. With all the pageantry of a soap bubble popping, in that split second of distraction, Brendan vanished into thin air. Parker frantically scanned the street from left to right, but there was no sign of the monster. Along with Nina's red Jeep, and a crater's worth of dirt from her front yard. The monster ceased to exist on this plane of reality. The blown transformer blew out a few extra sparks of applause, and Parker lay his head down into the snow. The cold had come full circle, from combatant to comfort. He heard his name and tried to raise his arm. Not that one, he muttered to himself, wincing with pain. He heard the wet crunch of fast footsteps approaching until he saw two familiar faces looming above him. Parker tried to crack a smile.
It worked,
he said.
It worked,
Benj replied. Then Parker coughed and spat thick, bloody saliva across his cheek.
I think I need to go to a hospital.
Parker and Benj laughed real, genuine, and in Parker's case, probably very painful laughs, while Tank stared at them in disbelief. Parker coughed again, which splattered more blood across his cheek, then turned his head as much as he could to Tank.
Can I have a cigarette?
He asked. Tank shook his head and started to laugh too.
I think Tucker stole them.
As the three men began to lose themselves in laughter, Several nearby front doors opened to reveal curious faces. Each one stared incredulously at the wreckage that had befallen their quiet corner of the city. Mine still intact, and safe from the terrible impossibilities that had occurred so near to them. Artwork for Life Without Consequence was provided by Daniel Sewell. You can find him on Twitter at writer Dan Sewell. That's DanSoule. Music for this episode was provided by me, Davey Francis. You can find more of my music and access to the Life Without Consequence Patreon at DaveyFrancis.com.
Shit.